Today's broadcast is pre-recorded.
I was reading the latest healthcare stats, and of course, what I'm going to say is most likely, I mean, there may be some debate, but America spends more money on healthcare than any other country on the planet. They do, or we do. But it doesn't mean that we're at the top of health. Far from it. We seem to have a major issue with heart disease, cancer, diabetes. If I kind of threw into the hat mental illnesses, oh my goodness, we'd be leading the charge on that deal. So I want to ask you a question today. And this is just the bottom line. Is your health becoming better or is it becoming worse? So whether it's you alone taking care of yourself, you know, you're your own advocate. If you decide, I do not want to go to a doctor and have them tell me what to do, I don't want to be on drugs. Well, is your health becoming better based on the plan that you've come up with? Or if you're under someone's care, is your health improving? Or is there proof or signs that it's deteriorating? Is it getting worse? Well, what I want to ask, and that's the whole purpose of this program, what is the very best possible course of action, or what's the most positive outcome? What can we do that's absolutely in your very best interest that's going to help you? Okay? So, let me begin today. I came across an article from the International Journal of Medical Science, and I believe it was a study published on July the 11th, 2022. So that's just, you know, 3.5 months ago, give or take. And so they're looking at benefits. They use a combination of two things with middle-aged men to see if it would help improve their health. Guess what they use? Pomegranate and chocolate. Really, it says they use extracts of punica granatum, which is pomegranate fruit rind. They're using the rind of a pomegranate. And they're using Theobroma coca seeds, which they got an extract, in middle-aged men, which I'll tell you what their definition is shortly of what a middle-aged man is. But I'm going to start to read the article here, or at least the abstract. Advancing age is a physiological progression associated with structural and functional decline in many human body organs and complemented by adaptations in behavior, physical activity, body composition, and reductions in energy and endocrine function. This is according to Sucharitha L. Pandit of Shetty's Hospital in Karnataka, India. What they mean is there's a huge difference between a young man and an old man. And you can tell by what they do and how they do it. It says that previous research that investigated the effects of blends of extracts of pomegranate fruit rind, they didn't even use a fruit, they just used the rind of the pomegranate. To me, that's interesting. And coca seed, it resulted in, and get this right here, this might be one of the takeaways. There was an increase in serum and free testosterone levels, as well as their muscle strength improved and the size of their muscles improved, and all they did was take a little bit of pomegranate fruit rind with coca seed. The current study included 120 men between the ages of 36 to 55, so I guess you're young if you're 35, and I guess you're an old man at 56. I'm just joking, come on. They received either 200 milligrams or 400 milligrams of the pomegranate cocoa extract or a placebo for 8 weeks. All participants were assigned to a program consisting of 30 minutes of walking a day for 5 days a week. Psychological, physical, and other symptoms associated with aging were ascertained from the responses to questionnaires administered at the beginning of the study, and then again on days number 7, days 14, 28 and 56, so you get it, week 1, week 2, week 4, week 7. So what they did was they looked at hand grip strength, the men's perceived stress. That's like asking somebody if the worst stress in your life would be the number 10 and zero stress would be zero, how would you rate your stress levels? They also looked at their hormone levels, and they looked at other lab tests to see if they couldn't figure out what's happening to them. Okay, here's the punchline right here. At the end of the 7-week period, both doses of the pomegranate cocoa extracts, which really it wasn't much, either 200 or 400 milligrams, that the pomegranate and the cocoa extracts were associated with significant improvement in the aging male symptom scores. Their free and total testosterone levels went up. They gained physical strength, and their perceived stress compared with the beginning of the study greatly improved, especially compared to the placebo group. The authors conclude that pomegranate and cocoa is a well-tolerated, safe, and effective nutraceutical blend that boosts sexual function, testosterone levels, and physiological and general well-being in aging males, which the last time I checked, if you're a male, you're aging. Hate to break it to you. I think I saw a piece where there is a chemical produced in your body called dopamine. Okay? They've shown that if you get up in the morning and you immediately make your bed, which means you're trying to bring order to your world, and you're trying to start off with a small, low-hanging fruit accomplishment, you know, to make yourself feel better. Well, if you make your bed, you get a little surge of dopamine. And then if you go for a 15 to 20-minute walk in the first thing in the morning before you do anything else, now we're in business because we're getting your body to naturally start pulsing, secreting, pushing out some dopamine so you can be productive. And I think that's the goal here. You don't want to sit on the couch all day long accomplishing nothing. No, you were designed for work. What is the work that God has in store for you? Well, you need a little bit of dopamine to do that. And so if you want to destroy your dopamine production, well, get on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook or, you know, hold your phone in front of you without looking away from it. That'll destroy it right there. But I noticed in this one study they showed that above baseline, your normal dopamine levels. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because you got to have dopamine if you're going to really be in the mood to learn and to grow and to get stuff done. So behind all the great accomplishments and behind all the great learning, there's some dopamine. So if you eat chocolate, that's been shown to raise dopamine levels 1.5 times above baseline. I kind of find that interesting, so I'm going, well, I wonder if that's why sometimes people eat chocolate, is because they're just kind of stuck and they need to do something to kind of get moving in the right direction. I think that nicotine, so one of the studies I looked at were these vaping devices. I'm not really high tech on those things. I've never vaped anything, but some people do. But in a vaping device, there's a set amount of nicotine that you're able to vape, or you're able to draw it into your body. Okay? I think it raises dopamine levels by 2.5 times above baseline. So could you imagine if a person just doesn't feel good? They're going, okay, what am I doing with my life today? I can't think of anything I want to do. I'm so bored. And they just want to feel that dopamine. Now, you get dopamine when you do work. And you kind of struggle through exercise in the morning. You're getting dopamine, but that's a good kind. Now, when you get dopamine from nicotine, it's not really the same dopamine as when you earn it. Cocaine makes it go up also, but the one that shocked me was methamphetamines, or meth. It increases dopamine levels in the blood by a factor of 10 times higher above baseline. I think I can start to see why it would be the most addictive drug in the universe. I really don't know that, but it sure sounds that way to me. And so what I want you to do is I want you to have natural dopamine, but if you earn it by doing good stuff and chores in the morning and exercising, well, then maybe you won't be tempted. It's really, you know what the bottom line is? Each one of us is on this earth for a reason, right? All of us have a work that we're supposed to do. And taking care of the responsibilities that God's given you is absolutely one of the greatest meanings of life on this planet. So having meaning apart from taking your responsibility seriously, it's going to be a hard proposition. Some of the research that I was looking at the other day showed that people that are prone to being addicted to anything, that could be nicotine. I'm not trying to pick on somebody. I think the gentleman yesterday told me he smoked 4 packs of cigarettes a day, or was it 3? Well, I think that's about what my dad smoked. He probably smoked 2 to 3. I'm just guessing. I really didn't keep a running tab, but you could see him open a new package of Camels without filters. But when a person doesn't do what they're supposed to be doing, that's where addiction comes in, so they can get that surge of dopamine they're not getting by doing what they're supposed to be doing. Okay? Article number 2. This one, to me, is really, really interesting. And there's a lot of takeaways from this. I've kind of looked over the article, and I've kind of come up with my list of 9 takeaways. There's probably a lot more than that. But to me, this is just so fascinating. On August the 17th of 2022, an article that was published, well, no, the article was published back in June of 2022. It's called Scientific Report. And what they're doing in this study is they're suggesting there's tremendous clinical benefit for an extract of the herb called Rhodiola rosea. And all they're doing is they're looking at type 2 diabetes, which, I don't know if you know this or not, folks, but there's a lot of diabetes. If you're in the parking lot of a large store and it's cool outside like it is today, and you see somebody walking the store and they're wearing shorts, and usually the number one shoe that I or shoe type that I see people wear that have this would be a Croc, you know, or Crocs rather, kind of like a slip-on Dutch wooden shoe but made of sponge foam rubber. I may have botched that. But if you look at their legs, you're thinking, aren't they cold? Shouldn't their legs be covered up so they can stay warm? No, you look at their lower legs, and they almost look like the legs are filled with rust. Well, that's diabetes right there. When the lower half of the legs get red and inflamed and they're swollen, that's diabetes, folks, right there, in case you're wondering. And I'm just going to read the abstract here. The prevalence of type 2 diabetes and the associated healthcare costs have risen steadily in recent decades, noted corresponding author Matab Jafari. He's a pharmacist at the University of California, Irvine. And I quote, current treatment recommendations include lifestyle changes as well as oral and intravenous medications. You know what I mean? There's a ton of drugs that somebody could swallow, like metformin. Or if they want to inject insulin directly, that would be another drug that could be used. And so this pharmacist, Dr. Jafari, is saying, however, these drugs have significant limitations and or side effects. And he's saying this increases our need for new therapeutic interventions. Okay? I'm with him on that. He's saying the system that we're relying on is really not working that well. It's extremely expensive. And it's not really fixing anything. That's kind of what he's saying. Okay? So we need to look at this from a different perspective. And we ask the question, what is it that we could do differently? And I'm going to quote, and it's her name is, this is a female, not a male. I'm sorry. Dr. Jafari is a female. I'm quoting her. Humans have used plants and natural products for thousands of years to treat diseases, and our study shows that Rhodiola rosea is a good candidate for further investigation, she remarked. Okay, well, I want to find out about this. What is she trying to tell us? She goes on to write that in mice that were genetically modified to develop obesity, they also were genetically modified to have elevated blood glucose and insulin resistance. Now, why did they do that in these mice? Because they're trying to mimic adult-onset type 2 diabetes in men and women. So in these mice that had nothing but problems with diabetes, what they did was they gave them Rhodiola rosea, which is an herb, comes from a flower that grows on the side of a mountain. They gave it to them for 4 weeks. Well, guess what happened? They had lower fasting glucose a week after the supplementation period, in comparison with the control group that only had water. So I guess what they did was they used a rhodiola rosea extract and just added it to the water. So when they drank water, they got a little bit of rhodiola. So after 1 week, they saw some benefit. That doesn't take long, does it? What if you noticed after 1 week of taking rhodiola rosea that your blood sugar levels were lower? Okay. It says the rhodiola rosea supplemented animals, they also exhibited better response to insulin 2 weeks after following the end of the 4 week period. Okay. 5 weeks after the conclusion of the supplementation period, mice that received the rhodiola rosea, they showed less inflammation than animals in the control group. Isn't that interesting? They decided to look for a different marker. Do they have inflammation? Okay. Analysis of the fecal microbiome, which what they're doing is they're looking at the feces or the poop of the mice, and they're trying to determine what has happened to their microbiome. What about all the bacteria that live inside of them? Some are good. Those would be the bacteroid eats, and then the bad ones, those are the firmicutes. They kind of mess everything up. So they looked at their fecal microbiome at four different points to show the difference between the mice that received the rhodiola rosea and the ones that only got the water. Okay? Here's the end of it. Our findings suggest that rhodiola rosea might be beneficial for treating type 2 diabetes, acting through changes in the microbiome that resulted in an increased gut barrier integrity, decreased translocation of inflammatory molecules in blood circulation, Dr. Jafari states. So after reading that article, here's the nine things I came up with. Rhodiola rosea, benefit number one. Blood sugar's lower. Well, who didn't want that? I think a woman told me the other day her blood sugar was at 798, and I'm going, excuse me, that's incredible. How come you're not dead already? I didn't say that to her. And so number two, what's the other benefit? The need for insulin is lower. Folks, I don't know if you know this or not, but the lower your insulin need, the longer you live and the healthier you are. Does that make sense? Benefit number three. They noticed that those that took rhodiola, they had much less inflammation compared to those that didn't get it. Folks, have you ever heard that inflammation is what drives all the disease in the body? Guess what makes cancer grow? It's inflammation. What makes cancer worse? It's inflammation. They showed that the microbiome improves. We're always looking at things like probiotics. What can we do to reduce the sugar? How can we get more good, beneficial bacteria to grow inside of our gut and get the toxic germs out, like parasites and candida and yeast and fungus and toxic bacteria like Clostridium difficile or staph or strep? Well, rhodiola improved that. Number five, they showed in the study that it improved the gut barrier. All this talk about leaky gut and how impossible it is for it to improve. Well, I think I read to you last week about the use of green tea extract at improving the gut barrier. Well, here's another one we can add to the list. Rhodiola seems to improve the gut lining. So you go from a leaky gut to a less leaky gut. That's called healing. Is there any drug that you know of that can do that? No. Just the opposite. If you take aspirin, Tylenol, Advil, naproxen sodium, all those things, Aleve, we could keep going. They all break down the lining of the gut, and that's what makes you vulnerable to inflammation and disease. Okay, point number six, it improves the body weight. They showed in these mice, all these other factors are finally playing into, can we explain why the body weight or the proportions of the mice are improving? They've gone from being prone to diabetes or genetically bred to have diabetes, and now they're getting out of it. They also showed in the study that the liver improves. Well, why would the liver improve? Well, if it doesn't have to deal with all the sugar and all the insulin, all of a sudden you're going to be going from growing a fatty liver to the liver being its normal size and doing its job properly. They showed that the muscles responded better. The mice became more athletic. What does that look like in the real world? Well, if you've been to the grocery store and you see some little old man just barely shuffling his feet a few inches with each step and he can barely move, well, what if he started taking normal steps? That'd be like a huge, huge deal right there. And so maybe the last one that I saw, it takes the burden off the pancreas. What do you do when all of a sudden the organs, they get to do their job, they're not burdened, they're not stressed so much? Isn't that like amazing right there? Of course, yeah. Okay. All right. Here's another article. This one is really, really, really good. This is almost exactly lock and step with what I've been talking about the last few weeks. But this one I just kind of came across and I thought, oh my goodness, this is really, really good. Now, let me give you like a reference point on this. Okay, one of the main causes of aging among all people, and let's just pick on men today. I'm going to leave women out of it. But men, they don't have a mechanism by which they have a menstrual cycle every 28 days. And so they don't really have a way to get rid of excess iron. Okay? And so they tend to accumulate, especially since almost all the foods that are out there in the world today, unless you know what you're looking for, they're fortified. And so if you get a box of macaroni and cheese, if you buy a loaf of white bread, if you have flour tortillas, anything that you would call a dessert or a treat that's made from wheat or from flour, well, it's fortified. And the term fortification means they've added into it nutrients and vitamins. Usually they're just all synthetic. They're just man-made. But one of them's not. One of them's just iron. Now, you may look in parentheses on the label and it may say reduced iron. But here's the problem, folks. If you don't pick up on anything else I've said today, you need to pick up on this. If you can get iron from a real food source, let's just say, for example, spinach. So you plant spinach in the garden. It pulls the iron out of the soil through its roots. And then the plant does its job that God has designed it to do. It converts the iron from the soil into a usable form that the plant can manage. And so when you eat spinach, you're getting a little bit of bioavailable iron that comes from the soil. Well, what about if you eat a raisin or a prune? Well, again, the plant itself is trying to prepare the iron in such a way that it's more agreeable to the human body. And so in turn, the iron from a prune or the iron that comes from beets or the iron that comes from spinach, or if you eat dark meat from chicken, or if you eat a steak once a month, or you have liver and onions, you're getting bioavailable iron that your body knows how to utilize. That's not what the reduced iron is in fortified foods. It's really not a lot different than if you take a nail or a bolt that's rusted you pick up off the sidewalk. That's kind of my running habit when I go for walks. I pick up every nail and sharp piece of metal that I can because I always think, what if there's some sweet older lady driving a car? I don't want her to have a flat tire. And so usually I just carry them in my pocket and throw them in the trash can. Of course, some of them are still good. I got to keep those, right? You never know when they'll come in handy. That's what happens when you're raised by two parents that grew up during the Great Depression in the 1920s. You don't throw stuff away. So I have a tin can that I put my old nails in because I may need them one day, right? So when you eat fortified foods like a breakfast cereal and you eat bread and tortillas that are white over and over again, well, you're just getting iron. And the problem is that form of iron, it doesn't really go into the hemoglobin real easily. See, if you can get your iron from eating your steak into the hemoglobin, then it's protected. But all this other iron that's not processed that way, it builds up in your tissues. And the problem is it begins the process of rusting. And you're probably asking me, well, Dr. Morgan, it doesn't make sense. How does iron rust? Well, it doesn't take much because your bodies are 70% water. And so iron does what iron is going to do. It's going to rust. Just like if I took a nail and I scraped the paint off of your car and exposed a sheet metal. I mean, today, what's going to happen to it? It's so moist outside because of the rain. You get rain or water and oxygen, the sheet metal is going to rust. It's just the way it is. That makes sense. Okay, so the big problem is, what do you do if you're a man and you have all this rust that's forming inside of you? Well, you got to get rid of it. Well, here's a whole different angle on this. And this comes from, I don't know if y'all heard this before, but this journal is called Nature. Nature is, that's the big time journal. Very prestigious. Which means they don't really publish junk articles. They don't publish ones that are questionable. They try really hard not to publish articles that are highly questionable or dubious as to the integrity. So they're trying to be honest. I'm not saying that anybody is 100% perfect, but they try. So this comes from August the 3rd, 2022, in Nature, in case you want to read it. And so Nature reports that the reduced form of vitamin K, you know, vitamin K is a nutrient, right? It has an antioxidant effect that inhibits cell death caused by ferroptosis or ferroptosis. That's kind of a new term, but let me tell you what happens. That's a way that your cells die prematurely. You destroy your cells, but guess what happens? Iron begins to rust and oxidize. Let me read it again. Nature reported that the reduced form of vitamin K has an antioxidant effect. That means it prevents oxidation. Or another way that I want you to think of it, which is accurate, it prevents rusting of your cells. So we're talking about vitamin K right now, in case you want to write that down. And ferroptosis is an iron-dependent type of programmed cell death characterized by the oxidative destruction of cell membranes. That's called rusting. That is the number one reason why your body's aging. It's rusting. You might want to listen to this article. The author goes on to say, we identified that vitamin K, including phylloquinone, which is vitamin K1, and minoquinone 4, which is vitamin K2. They are able to efficiently rescue cells and tissues from undergoing ferroptosis, according to study author Eichlin Mishima. I'm so sorry. I don't really mean to butcher these names. But isn't that interesting? Vitamin K to the rescue. Your cells are rusting out like a car that's been on the eastern seaboard and had salt water blasted over and over again. It is going to fall to pieces from corrosion. Well, vitamin K1 and vitamin K2 to the rescue. I'm telling you, this is a big deal right here. Ferroptosis has been implicated in Alzheimer's disease. Oh, you mean to tell me that maybe one of the reasons why people go through this horrific cognitive decline and they can't remember and they have short-term memory loss and they can't take care of themselves is because iron's rusting in the brain? That's exactly what they're saying. And vitamin K1 and K2 to the rescue. Okay, ferroptosis is a non-apoptotic form of cell death marked by iron-dependent lipid peroxidation. That's called rusting, folks. It has a key role in organ injury. So if you want to have an organ injury and Alzheimer's, what do? Just start rusting. Degenerative diseases. Well, let me guess, what would that be? That would be arthritis and diabetes and probably depression and anxiety, too. And it's also saying this, vulnerability of therapy-resistant cancers. Isn't that interesting? So the more that you have this process of iron rusting in your cells, that's what's linked to therapy-resistant cancers. So if you know of someone that you've heard they've tried one form of chemo, it didn't work, another form of chemo, it didn't work, other forms of chemo, experimental forms of chemotherapy, and it didn't work, well, maybe we can go back to the drawing board and we can ask the question, why? Well, here it is right here. Therapy-resistant cancers. Part of the equation is there's excessive oxidation and rusting. Okay, that's a pretty good reason right there not to eat white flour that's been fortified. Okay? And the author explains, here we show that the fully reduced forms of vitamin K, a group of naphthoquinones that include menaquinone, that's vitamin K2, folks, in case you don't know, and phylloquinone, that's vitamin K1. They confer strong antiferroptotic function. And in addition to the conventional function, lead to blood clotting. You also find lots of clotting where there's lots of resting in the body. To me, this is just incredible right here. I think I'll run back to the office and grab a bottle of vitamin K2 and start taking it. No, I actually have one that opened up. I didn't take any this morning, though. In the previous research, senior author Marcus Conrad and his associates found that enzyme known as ferroptosis. Anyway, I'm not going to read all that to you. Can I just tell you what the article's saying? It's saying they have come up with a plan to keep your body from rusting and premature aging and dying and developing cancer and diabetes and high blood pressure and Alzheimer's and dementia and Parkinson's, and I guess we could keep going and going. That's your takeaway. That's what I want. And maybe what I really want to do is, isn't it amazing how wonderful God created everything? It's amazing. But the problem is, we eat pure junk that man's made, and we call it good. Well, guess what? It doesn't have the nutrients we need. It's got a bunch of iron that's going to rust inside of you. Have you ever heard of Gouda cheese before? Some people love this stuff. I do, too. Guess what? It's got a generous form of K2 in it. I wonder if, because I've seen the videos on YouTube where they take the COVID vaccine and they put a magnet over the skin. Dude, there's something magnetic about that, right? And so, for most men, this is one of the biggest problems they're going to face in their lifetime. They literally start the process of rusting out. So let me give you another clue here. If you see a man in public and he's super, super red-faced, and you look at his cheeks, and it's easy to spot, he's got the, it looks like a road map of veins that you can see on his face, sometimes right on his cheeks, around his mouth. That's all resting iron right there. So for those people, one of the things they might have to do, they may have to take the appropriate course of action, just go and donate some blood. Now, technically, to the best of my knowledge, the most accurate test out there to really determine if you have excessive oxidation of iron is where they take a large needle and they do like a core sample of your liver. To me, that sounds painful. Good morning and welcome to the program. Thanks for your phone call.
Thank you for taking my phone call.
Yo, you betcha.
Mark Morgan, my big toe hurts so bad. My toenail kind of grows into it.
Is that why it's hurting?
Yeah, but I can't dig it out very good. But I went to the podiatrist, and he can dig it out, but it hurts so bad. So I keep it dug out best I can, but it still hurts. And
oh, no.
And it hurts inside even when the covers are on it at night.
How long has this been doing this?
2 or 3 years.
Okay. Well, can I give you some ideas?
Yes.
Do you ever take cod liver oil or fish oil as a daily supplement?
I take fish oil. What's it called? Omega oil.
Yeah. And there's 2 or 3 ways that you can test that to see if it's going to work for you. Okay. One, if it comes in a gel cap, just put it in the freezer. If overnight you pull it out and it's hard as a rock, that means the fish oil is no good. Because
right.
That's what fish oil really is. It's kind of one of its modes of action is to act like antifreeze. Do you remember when you were a little girl and you'd go swimming in Antarctica just for fun with the polar bears?
Every day.
You're like the toughest woman on the planet, I guarantee you. But if you make sure that you have a high-quality fish oil, that's one of the things that you should look at doing. The other thing that might really be a benefit to you is taking apple cider vinegar orally every single day.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to just try to guess. It's probably going to end up being somewhere between 2 to 3 teaspoons over the course of a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you could easily dilute that in water where it's like easier. So you need to see if that helps change that ingrown nail. The other thing that you can do that's real easy is just applying apple cider vinegar to it. Or castor oil.
Okay.
So every night you go to bed, you could just take like a bandage, not a bandage, I meant to say a Band-Aid, and just butter that sucker up with castor oil, okay, or even raw honey, and see if it changes the course of that nail from growing in. But almost always, that's like a mineral issue right there. So between the cod liver oil, the apple cider vinegar, you might start to see a change for the better where some of the pain begins to go away. And then if you could find a way to start walking barefoot all around the house, I'm not really asking you if you like that plan, but if you do, that may help. Because if that, you have a muscle in your big toe called the flexor hallucis longus. So if a woman wears flip-flops all the time, like all the years of her life, she's kind of asking for the toenails to grow inward.
I do that.
Well, can I talk you out of those flip-flops?
What should I wear?
Well, you've got several options here. You can try just wearing nothing if you're willing to do that. You know, when you're home. Wait a second.
This time of year.
Well, let me change this. Okay, just do it on Sunday mornings, and I need you to walk to the very front of the church and sit on the front row.
Okay.
Nobody's going to know that you're barefoot.
My feet will be cold.
Yes, they will. There's a type of a shoe that's called a zero drop shoe.
Okay.
But since you're all girl, you're going to have to go online and find one that you like the looks of. Sometimes they look a little unusual, but they make them in a form of a tennis shoe and even like a casual dress shoe. But they're called zero drop shoes. But what they do is they help realign the toes and the arch and the foot and the ankle. And so they're really beneficial. But the flip-flops, those flip-flops are probably the problem if you're wearing them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes the toe go the wrong direction.
Well, are Crocs bad?
I'm not going to say they're bad, but any type of shoe that you wear that causes your toe to flex upward like dorsiflex, that's what's making that toenail grow in or contributing to it. So if you had, I know those shoes look weird, but they make these shoes. They're like five-fingered toe shoes. It looks like you're putting on a glove on your foot where they bend around your toes. They're kind of freaky looking, but I'm sure that's what Moses wore when he was in the desert. So... the zero drop shoes is something. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I'll have to take your word for that. I wasn't there when Moses was.
Well, I just saw a video on YouTube, and it looked like it could be that. No, I didn't. You know what, though? This week, though, I watched a video on YouTube, and it was recreating the rich man and Lazarus. Have you seen that story? It's a little short movie?
No.
Oh, my goodness. It is downright scary. Oh, my word. You got to really be mentally prepared that they're going to they take the scripture literal when they talk about the rich man being in torments. It is not pretty. But then again, it's probably good that we hear both sides of the equation so we can make good choices, right?
Right.
So Crocs may work. I just don't know. They would have to fit very well, and you would have to have they'd have to be secured to where you wouldn't have to constantly curl your toe to keep them on. That's my big concern.
No, they're very loose.
Yeah, and if they're loose, then they're not going to work. But a zero-drop shoe would be. And I realize you have wooden floors, but if you start walking barefoot, let me tell you what's going to happen. Your body's going to get the signal that you need to grow more muscle in your feet.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever heard of a condition called osteopenia?
I have that.
Okay, well, osteopenia just means that your bones are getting a little bit thin. And if it's called osteoporosis, that means it's gone a little bit too far and you've lost a significant amount of bone. But the number one issue with all women and men is a condition called sarcopenia. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Sarcopenia means you're losing your muscles and you're losing your strength.
Ooh.
And so the solution for your toe is just to gain more muscle of your feet. And you can do that by walking barefoot.
Okay. When I put a oil capsule in the freezer, if it freezes, that means it's no good.
Yeah.
If it freezes.
So if it remains liquidy, like it's not freezing up, then that means it's good. The other way that you can do it is just take a piece of styrofoam, like if you had a styrofoam cooler, you could just break the oil into it, and if the oil starts to dissolve the styrofoam overnight, that means it's no good.
Okay.
You do not want a type of oil that dissolves styrofoam. That means it's got too many esters in it. When I say esters, I don't mean the Esther and Mordecai Esther, the queen of King Xerxes.
Well, I have you on the phone. One of my best friends has a toe that crosses over her other toe. What did you do to make that grow different?
It's the only way to do it is to walk barefoot. That's the only way I've seen. I've done this for 34 years now. If I can convince someone to start doing foot exercises, let me just kind of break it down a little bit differently.
Okay.
What if there was a video on YouTube or a book that said the world's greatest book on straightening the toes and correcting ingrown toenails? You'd say, oh my goodness, I'm going to read it. Chapter 1, ditch the flip-flops and ditch the shoes. Chapter 2, walk barefoot on the grass and on the floor, because that way you regain your strength. And then chapter 3 would be, you've got to grow some muscles on your lower body. That means your legs and your hips and your pelvis. And if you do those things, then you can start straightening the toes.
Wow.
Actually, that was, I still remember that day I was in the library. I had a flashback when you brought that up. But Dr. Brad McKechnie was demonstrating. He said, this is what straightens the toes when they're crooked. And he took a sheet of paper and he said, you got to crumple up a sheet of paper in a ball every day when the sheet of paper's on the floor. And I thought to myself, well, that looks ridiculously easy. Then we all tried it, and it wasn't. But then again, I have tried so many things that I failed at initially, and I said, okay, what am I doing wrong? But walking barefoot and walking on the grass, that is the only real way that I've seen. I mean, literally, you can go on YouTube right now and you can type in videos by Katie Bowman and she'll tell you the same thing. She's a foot expert. How to straighten them out. Now, the truth of it is, there's going to be a certain group in the medical profession that say, do not listen to what Dr. Morgan's saying. We're going to give you cortisone injections, and when those stop working, then we're going to amputate your toe.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the choice to take care of this, but the only way through it is your muscles of your feet become much stronger.
Did you say she should crumble up a paper on the floor?
Yeah, you kind of crumple it up and try to form it into a ball of paper.
With your toes.
Yeah, your feet and your toes.
Right. Okay.
And I'm trying to think. The book that I have by Katie Bowman, she kind of elucidates that, and I think, but if you want to just look up foot exercises, you can literally start to see a change for the better, but there's going to be a little bit of pain involved. There just is, because when you start walking barefoot, you might go, this is so uncomfortable, I don't like this.
Oh, I love to walk barefoot.
Good. No, well, and just endure your pain and suffering, and your foot will thank you. I mean, how does it affect me if it's 40 below zero today outside? I mean, I'm only telling you to do this. I would never do it myself.
Well,
you could have one day of the week that you call Barefoot Saturdays.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for your phone call. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your show.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Could you imagine what would happen if that lady lived on the beach and she could walk in sand every day? Now that would present an entire challenge for the foot, wouldn't it? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have low thyroid, and when I went to my doctor this time, he says my T3 is telling my brain that I'm normal, but my T4 is 25% higher than the highest number should be.
Do you have a number in front of me or in front of you?
I don't.
Okay.
I didn't get a copy of my results.
So he's saying your T3 is... See, usually when a woman has plenty of T3, she feels really, really good emotionally, and she feels really energetic. Mm-hmm. T3 is what helps generate energy in all your cells. It's really critical. T4 is usually the hormone that all feedback systems are set on.
Mm-hmm.
So your hypothalamus reads and says, hey, we have enough T4. But the conversion of T4 to T3, that may be the problem. And so there is a mineral that's called selenium. You ever heard of selenium?
I take it every day.
Good. I think the ones I'm concerned about, you have selenium, you have manganese, not magnesium, but manganese, and then you have copper and probably zinc. Those regulate how you your body converts T4 into T3. And so, okay, I probably shouldn't say this. I might get in trouble, but I'm going to anyway, okay?
Okay.
Back when I first started working here in Jacksonville, like 30-some-odd years ago, there was a doctor over in a small town. I won't tell you what his name is, but it began with the letter H. I won't tell you his name, though. But women from Jacksonville, they would flock to his office like crazy because what he would do is he would give them big doses of thyroid. And guess what the net result was? They would have tons of energy and they would lose weight like crazy. Now, you got to understand there's a side effect to taking too much thyroid. It can cause your bones to become paper thin.
Right.
And so if a doctor prescribes way, way, way too much thyroid for too long, you can say, well, I didn't bargain for that. I didn't know I'd lose weight and lose my bones at the same time. And so, you know, and I think those days are kind of over, but you know, I saw that back in the 80s where, you know, there was no qualms about prescribing this drug and that drug if the person was happy. Oh, you know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah.
And so the thyroid is really, really important and critical. So one of the aspects of the thyroid is we've got to feed it and nourish it. Now, I'm just going to tell you what I think about this.
Okay.
There's an element in nature that's known as fluoride. I think if we go to the state of Oregon and we look at the great, large land area city called Portland, they don't even use fluoride in the water at all. So I'm just trying to tell you, people do live and survive without fluoride. But for a lot of people, fluoride is so toxic to the thyroid. And I realize there's a lot of people that are going to argue with me on that, and that's fine. Everybody's got their own opinion, but I think we should look at the research on that. There was a study from that was reprinted and published in the Epoch Times. Am I saying that right? Do you know what I mean, that conservative newsletter?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And this was maybe a month and a half ago, something like that, but they showed that it was incredible. Only one part of fluoride added to a million parts of water, it lowered the IQ in people 5 to 6 points. Now, if you're like me, you can't afford to have your IQ drop 6 points. That's that's way too much. I won't be able to drive to get here in the morning. But that's huge. And so some of the studies now are showing that if you want to be dumbed down, if you want to screw up the thyroid, if you want to have horrible aches and pains in your body and just generally feel bad all the time, fluoride's a pretty good way of doing that. You know, that's what the Nazis used to do in World War II. They would add fluoride to the drinking water so the Jews in the, like Auschwitz or Munchausen, they would not rebel against the guards. I mean, have you seen those videos where the guards just shoot them and get them into the ovens? It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I always say to myself, somebody should resist, but, you know, it's just the way it is. So anyway, always think about fluoride. And so copper and iodine, those are the elements in nature that tend to detoxify fluoride. If you've been living in a normal world like we all have, you've been exposed to a lot of fluoride. I mean, do you bathe in city water?
Oh, yeah.
Then you got fluoride in you. And so one of the ways to bless and help your thyroid is just to think about maybe supplementing with some additional iodine and copper. Doesn't take much. But that'll start pushing the fluoride out. And that's what you want right there, and that cleans up your thyroid.
Okay. Does adding apple cider vinegar to your bath water help take out the fluoride?
I don't think it does, but I think what it will do is it helps gently discharge toxins from the body, and that's a good thing. I think you're doing great there.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that. I'll always do that.
I think instead of giving your husband a glass of apple juice, we should make it straight apple cider vinegar just to see what happens. I'm joking about that.
Well, I don't have a husband.
Oh. Anyway, back to the thyroid.
Right. I have cut out as much fluoride as I can, I read about that years ago when I first.
Oh yeah, okay. So you're way ahead of me on that deal.
Yeah, I don't drink the city water, and I don't use fluoride toothpaste or anything like that. So.
Well, and the other possibility that I want to kind of float your direction is maybe you picked up a boatload of fluoride that's just stuck in your body. Now we got to get rid of it so your thyroid can function better.
Okay.
So those are things that I see also. Once a person starts taking copper, they usually feel kind of bad for a few days, but that's mm-hmm. fluoride coming out of the body.
Oh, okay.
So at least copper and iodine may be something to help. Now, other studies show that if you walk every single day as an exercise, good. Mm-hmm. That's good for the thyroid.
Okay.
If I had to choose one food that I think is bad for the thyroid, it's modern wheat that's been sprayed with Roundup. That will poison the thyroid. But probably the simplest supplement to give a person to feed and nourish and target and heal and repair the thyroid is one called Phytrophin PMG by Standard Process.
Oh, okay.
It's just so easy to use. And what they do is it's an extract from a calf thyroid. So when they take the cow to the meatpacking plant, they're getting the thyroid, they remove the hormones. But there's little bit tablets, but when you swallow them, they contain proteomorphogens. And proteomorphogens, they tend to help assist in the healing and the repair of the thyroid.
Okay, and that'd be okay to take with my thyroid medication?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. It'll do nothing to mess that up. What medication are you taking?
Armor,
okay. Well, you've made a really good choice.
Yeah, I've been trying to. It's hard to find a doctor that'll give it to you.
Well, it's a philosophy deal.
I know. But anyway,
isn't it funny how this whole system works?
Mm-hmm.
But you have what you should do is just find a nurse practitioner that'll give it to you.
Yeah.
The nurse practitioners are like the greatest thing since sliced bread for the medical profession, if you ask me. Because what they do is they treat you so well, they're so kind. They're easy to talk to. They're just great, great folks. I just love the idea of a nurse practitioner. And they're just so gracious the way they care for you. They don't give you a hard time. Well, you know what I'm saying is true, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's what you want to do. So if you don't want to get the lecture from the medical doctor about levothyroxine or Synthroid versus Armour thyroid or something else like that, then just bypass the doctor and go to a nurse practitioner.
Oh, okay.
Wait, don't tell anybody I said that, okay?
I won't.
All right, good.
All right, so how much copper should I take?
You're probably somewhere between 2 and 4 milligrams for starts.
Okay. Is there enough in your multivitamin?
No, there's not.
No, there's no. Just a trace amount in there, isn't it?
Yes, and it may be a form that's not that great. One of the forms that I've found great success with is called copper glycinate. It's cheap stuff.
Okay.
It's kind of funny because when you open the bottle, look at it, the capsules are kind of blue, almost like a turquoise color.
Oh, wow.
I've heard rumors that turquoise is always found near copper mines. I wonder if there's a correlation between the two of them.
Well, there could be.
My dad always was really fond of turquoise.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
As a matter of fact, isn't turquoise mentioned as a substance that was used in building the temple of the Lord? Or is it used in the building materials of heaven?
I'm not sure.
Well, start at Genesis and go through Revelation today, and let me know where you find it. No, I'm just joking. But you could probably, if I had a computer in front of me, I could type in, where is turquoise mentioned in the Bible? And we'd probably have like every single verse pop up in front of us in 1 second.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but I want to say that turquoise is mentioned when Solomon was constructing the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem. You do
it
know that you,
is. I do remember some of the stones that it says.
Okay, we're going to do Bible trivia game right now because I want to.
Okay.
Who is the wisest man that has ever lived on the earth?
Well, it was Solomon.
How did he end up?
Oh, yeah.
Not good.
Not good.
I was reading a story the other day, and it said, I think it was like in 1st or 2nd Kings, one of them, that his attitude had changed, and I thought, oh, no. Mm-hmm. You see how somebody can even know the truth, but if your heart tilts toward your foreign wives and they worship gods like Baal and Molech, oh, it just goes badly, doesn't it?
Yes.
And I feel bad about that because, I mean, wasn't Solomon, I think that Solomon was the son of Bathsheba, is that correct?
Yes.
It's just amazing how gracious the Lord is and how he uses people, but he approached Solomon in a dream and he said, I need to understand how to manage these people. Give me some wisdom. And I thought, man, that is a brilliant statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it said that most likely he's the one that wrote the book of Ecclesiastes and Proverbs also.
Yeah.
I don't know who wrote the book Song of Solomon, though. Do you?
I don't know. I can't imagine who that could have been.
Well, I'm going to study that today, and I'll get back with you.
I love that book.
Really? What's your favorite part about the book?
I just love the way they talk about each other, you know.
It's a very sweet relationship, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's so sweet.
It's almost like that's the way it should be all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, there you go. There's our aim for today.
Right.
We're supposed to treat
Solomon.
We're supposed to be just like Solomon, the way he talks to what was her name, the Shunammite?
Oh, I can't remember what her name was.
Well, I remember the story of Abishag, the Shunammite, that his brother wanted, and that ended disastrously.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I love the Old Testament. Such a great stories that we can learn from, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
What's your favorite story in the Old Testament, or what's one of them?
I love the book of Esther.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of, too.
Yeah,
I love that verse at the very end of chapter 4 where Mordecai says, how do you know that you haven't been called to this royal appointment for such a time as this?
Right.
See, that's good for all of us to remember. What if we come across somebody at a gas station? See, a man told me a story yesterday about how he's in a restaurant, and there was a couple that was having a very, very difficult issue emotionally. I'll say it that way. And the man left, and the woman was crying, and he walked up to her, and this is what he said. He says, ma'am, he said, I just want you to know that, I know that you're in pain and you're hurting, but God loves you, and I feel your pain. And I think he said he was going to pray for her, and she's just like shaking her head up and down. But I thought, that is like so beautiful.
Yeah.
Just letting a person know that they're loved and cared for, especially when there's points in their life when things don't go so well.
That's true.
Anyway, this program is supposed to be all about health. I've kind of got off track today.
I know. Well, we got to go. We got off of the subject today.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for your phone call, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend, ma'am. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.